My name's Paul Bestall, and you're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. The world is a possibility, if you'll only try. Welcome back to Mysteries and Monsters. So, I thought I'd surprise you today with a bonus episode, so I hope you enjoy it. I'm joined today by Romanian author Dan D. Farkas. Dan has had a long interest in ufology, and he's authored over 30 books, with two translated into English, UFOs Over Romania, and his latest book, which we discuss in our interview, Hypercivilizations. Dan looks at the possibilities of life in the far-flung corners of the universe and the potential to evolve into a hyper-civilization. The book covers the chances of such situations occurring, UFOs, abductions, religion, spirituality, folktales and myths, and offers us tantalising possibilities of what could possibly happen. It's a fascinating essay on a myriad of opportunities, done in a very analytical manner, thanks to Dan's background in mathematics. It's an excellent book with arguments both for and against such probabilities. So before we dive into our chat, once more I just want to say thank you again for the very kind comments and feedback we've received in the last few days. It still humbles me to receive such comments praising me and the show, but at the end of the day, it's the guests that make the show what it is. My only regret is that I didn't take the plunge sooner into podcasting, but there's no point looking backwards. And with that in mind, we'll be dropping another episode this Monday, the 3rd of June, when I am finally rejoined by Seth Breedlove to discuss his new small town monsters film, Terror in the Skies. It's absolutely fantastic. I was very lucky enough to see it next week, but I don't want to talk about that too much because obviously you'll hear the interview on Monday. So don't forget to subscribe to us through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you use. And please rate and review us so we can continue to grow, thanks to you guys. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and YouTube, and you can also support us on Patreon for just $1 a month. Now, it's time to join Dan D. Farkas to discuss his book, Hypercivilizations. My guest today is author Dan D. Farkas. Dan has written over 30 books, among them UFOs Over Romania. In his latest book, Hypercivilizations, An Answer to ET Contacts on Earth, Dan discusses the challenges of science, religion and history to grapple with the complex questions of UFO sightings and interactions, and puts forward conclusions for a variety of scenarios and theories. Dan, thank you for joining me today. Mulțumesc pentru timpul acordat.
Oh, it's a pleasure for me.
Thank you. So, you've a long history of writing books in Romania,
yes,
Dan.
Yes, but in Romanian, yes. Not in English.
So, is this the first book that you've written that's been translated into English?
It's the second book, Hypercivilizations.
Yes.
The first was UFOs Over Romania.
Mm-hmm. And when did that come out?
In 2016.
Ah, very good, very yes. Good. So,
and also with Philip Mentor.
Yes. Well, Philip's a very
it's
kind
the same,
man.
The same publisher.
Yes, Flying Disc Press.
Yes.
Brilliant. I shall look for a copy, Dan, because it sounds really interesting. So, I've read the book, and I was deeply impressed with it. I found it very well written, articulate, and challenging. What made you discuss the subject in that matter?
So it's a synthesis of many other works. So I am involved in a low level in Romania in the UFO business since early 80s. But I was interested only to spread the news about UFOs, abductions, and so on in the Romanian environment.
Yes.
And so I am well accustomed with all that neighborhood around UFOs. I started with an article. It is an interesting thing. It was late 70s. An article, why are silent the extraterrestrial civilizations? Because my background is in mathematics, physics, and computers.
Yes.
But and I have even a doctor's degree in mathematics and, let's say, computers. Making in the faculty mathematics, I had practice also in astronomy. So I know very well what the universe is, how it is composed, theories about the universe, and so on. And if you have an idea about this, it's impossible to not put yourself the question if there is other civilizations in the cosmos or not. And I made my own calculations, of course, keeping into account the what was in the literature, and the result was that there are some civilizations in our galaxy, not too many, but the universe, in the universe, there are at least 150 billion similar galaxies.
Yes.
So if my calculations were exaggerated, too optimistic, it's so huge place for other civilizations in our universe that it's impossible to be alone. And that was what was the first idea. The second was that in our, the second was linked with time.
Yes.
So if we accept, it's also a theory, if we accept that the universe was born through this Big Bang, 13.8 million, a billion years ago, that means that the several civilizations in our galaxy are not in the same stage.
Yes.
They were born apart from each other with tens or hundreds of million years. So not thousands of years difference, but maybe hundreds of million years. That is a huge difference in our or science fiction, for example, or in SETI approach. It's like an axiom that we should meet another civilization more or less of the same level as we are.
Yes.
And my first point was to discover this is almost impossible. So, in our galaxy and maybe many galaxies around us is no civilization on the same level. Same level means plus minus several thousands of years.
Yes, yes.
It's impossible to find such a civilization, particularly a civilization using for communications radio. to give you an example about SETI searches. but if we speak about differences of hundreds of million years, that means a difference like from us to the ants, or maybe microbes.
Yes.
So it's a huge difference between a previous civilization and ourselves, or technical civilization.
Yes.
And if it is so, there are some conclusions. First of all, it is also one point here. Maybe there were more civilizations like ours, but they likely destroyed themselves.
Yes.
Because if a civilization has aggressiveness as we have, and if they have fighting for property, for religion, for a different ideology or so, it's very high probability to destroy themselves. And it's also for our civilization. So it's maybe Carl Sagan told the probability to survive our civilization in the next 1,000 years is 1%, no more. So it's possible many civilizations like ours destroy themselves. The possibilities are unlimited. So it's not only by war. It's biological, for example. We discover a hyper microbe. And it will destroy instantly all advanced form or life.
Yes.
And including humans. Also, so there are different scenarios.
I think the key aspect there, Dan, is that I think a lot of people think that forget about the potential of catastrophe.
Yes.
You know, as you refer to there in regards to war, but you know, we've also got disease. There is, you know, there are volatile planets. You know, we could see massive volcanic eruptions that could cause the end of civilization.
It's very interesting. If you use probability, the probability to be destroyed by a natural catastrophe is much less than to destroy ourselves.
Yes.
It's of course, there is a possibility to be destroyed by a natural catastrophe, but it's the probability is very low.
Yes.
But it's very high to destroy ourselves as the things look now.
Mm. Yeah, very much. Do you think that probability has increased over the last 100 years?
Yes, of course. And it will increase because we discovered nuclear bombs and so in the 20th century.
Yeah.
But nobody is thinking that we will discover in the 21st, 22nd century much more destroying weapons.
Yes.
Maybe to torn apart the all the Earth.
Yeah, terraforming. For example.
Yes. No, to destroy.
No, but that's what I mean.
To make Earth to be exploding.
Yes. But I'm not
everything.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that would be, as we've seen over the last 70 years, the gradual development of that kind of weaponry.
And it will be destroyed, not by. In a clever, so-called clever war, but maybe by one crazy person who has access to a button.
Yes.
It could be also in such way, or by a religious fanatic saying it's no problem if all mankind disappears, because God will choose the right from the evil.
Yes.
And thinks that this kind of thinking is spreading.
Yes.
And this is the problem.
Yes. I think there's an interesting point that you make in the book, that at this moment in time on Earth, there are at least 150 religions with more than a million followers.
Yes.
So they can't all be right and they can't all be wrong. So whose answer? That's the problem.
Each of them is convinced that it and only it has the final answers, the final truth.
Yes.
This is one of the big problems.
Mm.
So, if we have this this scenario, maybe there is an 1% surviving civilizations.
Mm.
If a civilization find the way to understand each other,
yes,
and to became a civilization of peace and of love,
yes,
and so maybe can survive, and it will evolve in the future and transform itself in something very different from what we are now. Maybe in something spiritual, maybe in something immortal, I don't know, but the evolution in the next, not thousands of years, but millions of years, it's impossible to be imagined by us.
Yes.
But they would be transformed in something completely different. We cannot imagine. And I named such a surviving civilizations after hundreds of millions of years of surviving hyper civilization.
Yes.
If you ask me what is exactly a hyper civilization, I cannot say you, because we cannot imagine what it could be.
Yeah. I mean, go on, Dan.
Yes, it should, and it almost must exist around us.
Yes. I mean, do you think that perhaps that is sometimes the problem we have when we look for life scientifically, as you refer to SETI using radio transmissions to search for life, that we are limited by our knowledge and our understanding of what life is on Earth?
We are always limited. Maybe Haldane, it was a biologist, he told that the universe is not only stranger than we imagine, it's stranger than we can imagine.
Yes, very true.
So, and we have sometimes the impression we understand things, but this is a limited understanding.
Yes.
The very truth are beyond us.
Yeah, I mean, do you think in that aspect then, Dan, that science has become in some disciplines as dogmatic as some religions are?
Yes, and many scientists and philosophers of science told this, that for example, Thomas Kuhn,
yes,
and Popper, and so we must understand that we should open toward many other means of science. The science is very good, and it's the best we have, but it put some conditions. For example, all skeptics to see the phenomenon and to have the phenomenon in a laboratory to make experiments and maybe measurements. So it's okay if we can do this. But if we have UFOs, if we have abductions, if we have, for example, fairies in forests.
Yes.
Because many people, I met people who told me they met fairies.
Yes.
And it's not only one or two crazy people. And it's not only in Romania, it's in many places. And all this, including the existence of God and of some other, maybe afterlife, and so all this is impossible to be accessed by science with its means and its conditions. So if we want to learn more about such things, paranormal or even religious and so, folkloric, traditional and so, we must open more the scientific methods.
Yeah.
For example, with a good witnessing and so.
Yeah, so very true.
Yes.
I think one of the key point that I drew from the book, amongst others, because I didn't expect it to be as challenging a book, which is what I really enjoyed about it, Dan. It's very, very well written. I'm very impressed with it. So I really took to heart the point that regardless of which theory you follow in general, the believers in that system will ignore any evidence that doesn't fit into that preconceived belief or idea.
Yes. So I will talk about, let's say, debunkers and
yes.
and also me. For the debunkers, everything in science is gospel.
Yes.
So they, if you cannot explain something by what we know now, it's suspect. Take it in my laboratory and I will say you if you are right or not. But I cannot take those things in your laboratory. And this is the one point of view, the debunker's point of view.
Yes.
It cannot exist, so it does not exist.
Precisely.
So don't butter me with evidence, because it is bullshit. and that is the manner they think.
Yeah, no, you're very, and I think you can apply that to anything. I would be really interested, Dan, to look at how
yes.
people viewed the future of perhaps space
yes.
or genetics, say in the 1960s, compared to how we
yes.
view it now.
Yes, they don't understand that after 300 years from now, the people will laugh about our theories in the same manner we laugh about the theories 300 years ago.
Yes.
And and not only about theories, but about the method, about the philosophy of science. So everything changed. And I tried to have another look. And that look was, in very short, the following.
Yeah.
If civilization survive our problems, so it's long time surviving.
Yes.
It's first of all very different from what we have in science fiction. It must be a civilization without aggressivity and with love for every form of life and intelligence. So if you go now, and if you are a clever person and you are going in a forest and discover maybe a new species of ants,
yes,
you will not going to the queen of the ants and saying, yes, let have some relations with you and I will give technologies to develop you and so on.
Mm.
But I will make everything to preserve this,
yeah,
and to follow how they evolve.
Mm.
Maybe I will take some ants and examine them.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll send them back with a monitoring device,
mm-hmm,
to learn more about how this anthill works.
Yes.
And I have no intention to invade the anthill,
mm,
or to destroy, or things like this, to make maybe slaves from,
yes,
from the ants, because I like so much life,
mm,
that I cannot do things like this. And there is a slight movement in ecology. The 100 years ago, it was a great thing to hunt animals in the jungle and so.
Yes.
Now it's almost forbidden.
Mm.
And also, you can do everything with your dogs and cats. Now it's almost forbidden to treat badly your dog.
Yes.
And so there is an evolution toward this kind of approach.
Yes, very much so.
And the hyper-civilization will, this is a theory, of course, will wait to see what we are doing here.
Mm.
What we are doing, because we are not ants.
No.
It's very important. We are a potential future hyper-civilization. So we will meet them at a level of intellectual level,
mm,
in a distant future.
Yes.
So they are interested what we are doing and what are our specificity, and they are very interested to not destroy this specificity.
Mm.
If, for example, if you go in Papua New Guinea,
mm-hmm,
and you have a tribe and move this tribe in center of New York,
yeah,
this tribe will survive,
mm,
but they will survive as zombies,
mm,
because they will understand, but not too much.
Yes.
And also, they had a certain understanding of their environment,
yeah,
which will be completely lost.
Yes.
So this is why higher civilization, like, let's say, the hyper-civilization, will not interfere with us only very in very discreet manner.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very true. I think we can only look at the tribes of the Amazon, Dan.
Yes.
Who, for me, I find it quite disturbing that there are certain scientists who feel that they have a right to drag these tribes out into the modern world. And I don't understand that on a moral level, because these people, as you refer to there, they have a society and a culture that has developed their I wouldn't say limited, but they have a knowledge base that for them is everything.
It's different from ours.
Precisely.
And if we destroy this very small civilization, we will destroy some ways to see the reality. And we need some alternative ways to see reality.
Absolutely. I think, if anything, what we've seen over the last, 600 years, as people began to travel the globe, I have yet, and you can point this finger at any culture really, I have yet to see anything where someone has turned up in a different continent and it has turned out well.
We had the luck to have at least two civilizations which were strong enough to give back us something.
Yes.
It's Chinese and Hindi civilization. And they understand, for example, human body completely differently as we understood in Europe before. And I wonder if we did not destroy the Aztec, the Inca civilizations.
Yes.
Maybe they, if they had several centuries to evolve before the contact, maybe they will would have also some new viewpoints about human body and many other things.
Yes.
For example, we wonder now about the Maya. They understood in a different way many things, and why not?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I think we could look back in history at all the great civilizations, or perhaps even the lost civilizations, such as the Incas, the Aztecs, the Maya, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, Mesopotamians. I mean, these were very self-contained cultures that had completely developed an entirely unique system based on their experiences.
So we inherited the Babylonian and Egyptian civilization, not everything, but some pieces. The old Jewish and other civilizations.
Yes.
But it's we have not the final toolbox of possibilities to see the reality. In this toolbox, we can add many other, and this could be why we are not contacted directly, only in a very discreet way, and why somebody around us don't give us their technologies. This is another problem also. If a crazy hyper-civilization would give their technologies to the humans, they immediately will make weapons on these technologies, and if these technologies means to have easy traveling in cosmos, the earthly civilization will be the biggest danger for the universe, because we'll start to invade and to destroy, and so, because this is our habit.
Yes. And yes, sadly.
So it's I think logically, it should be an embargo on transferring information to us.
Yes.
And it's in the old tales, for example, in Book of Enoch, or in the myth of Prometheus.
Yes.
There is a hint about forbidding to give the knowledge to humans.
Mm.
Maybe this is because it was a contact.
Yep.
And it was also the interdiction to continue to give information to humans.
Yeah, yeah.
In the older times.
Absolutely. I think there's a very interesting part of the book where you talk about the chance of contact being at a specific time in history. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't comprehend, in regards to, we assume that someone must want to come now to see Earth now, but we don't know that they turned up 100 million years ago, because if they were so far advanced, there is nothing to suggest that they've already been and gone, oh, there's nothing much here, and left us.
Yes, maybe they discovered hundreds of million years ago how to travel through cosmos in certain form. I don't imagine how.
Yes.
But it will be possible. And they discovered that Earth was a promising place. And they installed themselves around Earth, maybe beneath the Earth, and monitoring only how we evolve.
Yes.
So maybe they picked up some individuals from different species. And moved them in some other places. We don't understand where. And it is logically possible that there are some different places where people was abducted forever, not with coming back, and living in those places and having families, and also to make some new races or species of humans and of animals.
Yes.
Yeah. And why not sometimes sending them back to the Earth? You are interested, as I understand, in monsters.
Yes, I am indeed.
So one of ideas is that Bigfoot does not exist on Earth, but it exists on some special places, in some small reservations outside Earth, and they come with maybe with UFOs or other manners here on Earth, only to be to show them and to go back. And it could be also with other kind of animals.
Yes, very true. I think
so. It's not my hypothesis. It's discussed about.
It is. I think when you open your mind up to the potentials and possibilities, when you look at this scientifically and evolutionarily, Dan, I think, you know, as we've referred to earlier, a lot of people tend to go, well, this is what I think, therefore I will only follow that line of inquiry. They don't consider the potential or possibility of strands running alongside or intersecting throughout history or time.
So if I understand you, it is this hyper-civilizations, is a theory.
Yes.
As all theories on the world, a theory is not the ultimate truth.
Yes.
It's a vision about how could be the things.
Yes.
And also, the philosophy of science put a condition.
Yes.
If you have a theory, please show me some facts explained by your theory,
yep,
and maybe not explained by other theories, to accept that your theory is an interesting one.
Yes.
So I introduced in my book five types of facts, which can be explained easily with this theory of hypercivilizations, but are difficult to accept with the traditional worldview. So the first is UFOs.
Yes.
UFOs are real. You know about this article in New York Times in December 2017.
Yes, absolutely. Leslie Keene's article.
Yes, and also that there are a huge amount of military records about UFOs,
yep,
and huge amount of military problems.
Yes.
Because the military, and I know, I have my own sources. I know in China is the same problem. They are desperate to understand what that is. And in Russia also, what that is. So UFOs exist. This is one kind of facts.
Yes.
The second is abductions. I was convinced by, for example, by that conference in 1992 at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and they had 2,000 cases.
Yeah.
And what and many many professors, academics around. I had a very very much respect for John Mack, for example, professor,
yes,
at Harvard Medical School, and they examined the cases, and they were astonished that they were very similar to each other, and they didn't talk with each other.
Yes.
So it was a very important issue.
Very true.
I met in Romania cases of abduction and exactly similar with those in all continents of the world.
Yes.
So the abductions also exist. The third is traditions. Traditions means folklore, fairies in forests and so. And there are everywhere in the world. For example, John Mack he's dead, unfortunately.
Yes.
Had a book with three shamans from three continents.
Yes.
And they had contacts with other people from other worlds.
Yeah.
So it's the shamans, there is other traditions.
Yeah.
But I met in Romania a case with, there is a bed fairy in the forest, a huge 2 meter, 2.5 or 3 meters high lady living in forests with small children around. She is the maid of the forest. This is the local name.
Yeah.
Everybody knows about, even now.
Yes.
And I have filmed case when that person was seeing descending. So the witness is told us that she was descending from a UFO. So the connection between the UFOs and these traditions like fairy tales and so, fairy tales with other realms when the time is different and you cannot come back, because if you want to come back, you will die and so. It's everywhere about. So it's also a third fact for the civilization. The fourth is religions.
Yes.
All religions speak about some power above us intervening with lights, coming, making some rules and so, and going back and making magics and so.
Yes.
This is all. And also fifth is a lot of paranormal facts. I enjoy the idea the reader will discover, because it's linked with Akasha.
Yes.
And in Akasha, I think hyper civilizations included some information. For example, information about warn us to be less aggressive, because we destroy word, and these apocalyptic messages, they are coming from a certain place, and this place could be, for example, similar with Akasha. So a general, this is also with some examples which we can introduce in as facts, that hyper civilizations are around us. and making some magics. And we will not recognize those facts because we are culturally blind. This blindness is also discussed in the book.
Yes.
This is psychologically recognized. If you are raised in a certain worldview,
yep,
will be impossible to accept some other views which are outside yours.
Mm.
And this is why we don't. So finally, there are about extraterrestrials.
Yes.
There are two extraterrestrial hypotheses. The primitive one, which is the SETI, the science fiction, they should land on the lawn of White House and so, or invade us, invaders and so.
Yes.
Yes. This is the primitive.
Mm-hmm.
And this is we believe in, and completely different is the hypothesis of hyper-civilizations, which can explain the facts I included, like UFOs, abductions, and so on.
Yeah, I think there is often, for me, in that kind of thought, Dan, a kind of arrogance that we assume that any other civilization outside of this earth would naturally want to come here. And I've always been surprised, even so, that we consider ourselves, even at this tiny juncture in time in our evolution, that we consider ourselves probably far more important to the universe than perhaps we actually are.
Yes. I think in this hypothesis of hyper-civilizations, that the hyper-civilizations consider us a very important newcomer, but we are not matured.
Yes.
We are not mature enough.
Mm.
They expect and they wait us to be mature, to maturize.
Yeah, yeah.
And I included in in the final part of the book, two conditions I suppose to be a major civilization.
Mm.
The first is to understand each individual on Earth, understand that more important than wealth and possession and even sex and pleasures,
yes,
more important is to help and to love the human, the beauty of human spirit.
Mm.
So to love in each human his spirit, his realizations. It's very interesting. An actor told why the extraterrestrials are coming here.
Mm.
Because they like what we did, what music did, made Bach, what and Beethoven, what art made Michelangelo, and so. So they love all spiritual achievements, and they want every people put on first place the love for this, Because if will be so, nobody will destroy, for example, statue of Buddha only because some religious so-so.
Yes.
And so everything which is made by the human spirit must be more important than everything. Mm. And for this must have a second condition. So if you are Jewish or Muslim or Hindi or Buddhist or everything, I must appreciate Hinduism because this is one of the beauties of human spirit.
Yes.
I must love Muslim Quran and so.
Yes.
Because even they contradict each other. And for this, I should accept that nobody has ultimate truth. And I, this is an idea, very complicated one, but it's described in the book. I must try to think in a pluralistic way, accepting Christianism along with Hinduism, along with Muslim religion and so, and along with atheism, why not?
Yeah.
And trying to find the path to the higher powers through all of them.
Yes.
Simultaneously, in the same time. This is very important.
Yeah, I think that's a very original approach to the situation, Dan, because like you say, as with anything in life, people tend to concentrate on what differentiates us from, say, you know, at the end of the day, I'm English, you're Romanian, but we're both European. We're both, you know, members of Western civilization, and we are both members of planet Earth. And yet, more people will focus on the fact that I am English and you are Romanian.
Yes.
Rather than...
So we have to understand this and love every level.
Yes.
And I love to be Romanian, and I love also, or maybe I try to understand how love his people, a Hungarian and English and so. I try to understand because everything is in this human beauty, the beauty of human spirit.
Yes, very true. And I think that approach that you refer to in one of the chapters is looking at everything collectively rather than the individuality of each of those, because they are essentially belief systems, be you a Hindu, a Muslim, Jewish, Christian, atheist, regardless, it is your belief.
They are beautiful thinking systems. And I cannot destroy one because I am attached to another.
But that's what I think too many people try to do.
Yes, unfortunately, and my hypothesis is this is why hyper-civilizations are waiting.
Yeah.
How we solve ourselves this problem.
Yeah, I think that's always been, especially in certain science fiction books and films, there has always been this kind of undercurrent about differences and a situation occurring which makes people realize that everyone is the same, it doesn't matter. And the only way we will achieve or overcome a scenario is by coming together collectively as one.
As if we will understand the supremacy of human spirit's body, beauty, it will generate automatically love and good and fine of wars and
there is also like I say, when it comes to things like ufology, the overriding experience throughout the years is, in the vast majority of cases, especially where there has been an interaction, it tends to be quite positive rather than a negative. I mean, obviously there will be certain people that have a negative response to that interaction, but in general these visitors seem to be quite friendly.
Yes, generally speaking, there are some exceptions.
Yes, of course.
But generally speaking, they are, let understand the witnesses. The witnesses told that they were told that we are peaceful and we want only your good, and we are waiting for you, and things like this. And we want not to hurt you. Of course, there are these experiments of hybridization.
Yes.
And they are, in my opinion, true, of course. And they are for improving humans toward this kind of, to have more minds capable of understanding this beauty of human spirit. If, for example, the beauty, to simplify the things, not everybody understands really the beauty of human realizations. You understand maybe one kind of music. Some evolved people understands other kind of music. So this difference is also in our brains. So making interventions could produce, for example, people to appreciate more the beauty and, of course, the beauty of human achievements, the beauty of human spirit, and so on. This is one possibility.
Absolutely.
And also the abductions, many of them come back with more love for biology, for ecology, for animals, to preserve the health of Earth, and so.
There is a large body of reports. Was about to say exactly the same thing, Dan, that for a lot of people that have this kind of experience, it's as if they've transcended from one way of looking at the world around them to finally realizing their place amongst everything as an equal.
So this could be a reason for abductions and partially for the interventions, genetic.
I mean, it leads you down all kinds of possibilities, and one of the, you know, one of the book's key strengths for me is the way that you've broken it down into the 11 chapters, looking at different aspects of that kind of changing of your thought process, which I think you do wonderfully well in this book. Is don't
yes, it's very important, and I think it's a strategy for future.
Yeah, very much so.
I think humanity.
Absolutely. I think everybody can learn a lot reading your book, Dan. It certainly made me look at certain things very differently.
Yes, I will be very pleased if many people will read the book and will understand that message.
Yeah.
Because it's more than theory, it's also a message.
Very much so. As I said at the beginning when we first started talking, I found it a challenging book, but I don't mean that negatively. I liked the fact that it challenged my thoughts and made me think differently about certain aspects, and I was very, very impressed, Dan, with how that I had an emotional response to your book.
I hope our conversation will help for that.
Absolutely.
Our listeners will become curious.
Yes.
And also, the Latins had a word, habent sua fata libelli, that means each book has its fate.
Mm.
So maybe the fate of this book will be to open some understandings in the readers.
Absolutely. Well, I can't praise the book enough. I really, really think it's a great book, Dan, and you should be very, very proud of it.
Thank you.
So, what's next for you? Have you got another book lined up? What are you planning on doing next, Dan?
So it's for me. It's not very easy to write in English because I don't master.
Yes.
The English language, which is a great language.
Mm.
And I was frustrated sometimes that I cannot express in a very colorful way my ideas. But I hope I am now waiting which will be the answer of the readers for that book.
Absolutely.
And my attitude will be after. Mm. If this book will have a very good fate, then maybe I will write another. But in that moment, I have no other plans.
Mm.
I have two books in English. They are on Amazon, both of them. You can buy them. So they are complementary because this UFOs over Romania had plenty of cases from Romania, from all this kind of UFO and connected issues.
Yes.
And I think they are interesting to be read both.
Absolutely.
So I am waiting which is the result of this.
Brilliant. Well, listen, I will certainly get myself a copy of your book about UFOs over Romania. It's something I've always been kind of interested in, especially as we both grew up on opposite sides of the Iron Curtain.
Yes.
Because I don't think there's hardly anything enough about ufology or UFOs during that Cold War period, other than from Russia. So there isn't much writings about Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, and those kinds of places, Dan. So I'm really looking forward to getting a hold of that, because that's something I would be really interested in. So I'd look forward to that too.
Yes, there is in the publishing house of Philip Mendel is also an interesting book from Polish UFOs.
Yes,
about Polish UFOs, and I think several books about Russia.
Yes, no, brilliant. So, Dan, I just want to say thank you so much for your time today. It's been lovely to speak to you.
Yes, it was a pleasure for me also.
And like I say, once again, I love the book. I wish you the very best of success with it. And continue to do what you do. All the very best, my friend.
Thank you, and good luck for you too.
Thank you. L'arrivedere.
L'arrivedere.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.